Hi, I'm David and welcome to the Datasaurus Rex podcast, where we interview data visualization experts and get to know them and their data vizzes that little bit better. By the end, you should learn new skills and get inspired to enhance your own data viz game. And today's guest is Cole Naflick, who's famous for running the Storytelling with Data, how do you describe it, business, franchise, like experience?
Company, workshops. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. I actually first discovered Cole just I bought your book at an airport like about five years ago. And it just kind of like I was just like, oh my God, this is so good. Like, because I'm quite into data viz as it is. And your book just stood out and I started reading it and it just makes it so accessible and easy to understand how to just improve your data viz game, but also to explain the benefits. It's not just to like show off. It's you actually really make it very obvious and easy to understand why we should care. Which
I love hearing that. Yeah. And that's the point, right? Is that everyone can do simple things to help make our data more understandable and help more people pay attention to it.
Mm. And I think that's very important, especially in this day and age where business and personal life, like data just gets more and more prevalent in our lives. So I think having that skill is valuable to everyone. Yeah. For those of you who are new to the podcast, we're going to do things a little bit differently today. It's just going to be more asking Cole questions, which is great. We've had a few come in from people from the community. So I'm going to make sure we ask those as well. But I guess we'll just dive in. Let's do it. Okay. So the first question is, well, we already touched upon this, but how would you summarize storytelling with data? And like its potential benefits to people if they engage with it.
Yeah. So when I think about the company and the thing that sort of unites all of the different areas of work that we do, at the basis of it, our goal is to help people and organizations make graphs that make sense and go beyond just sharing the data and really weave that data into a compelling story that'll hopefully help someone understand something in a different way or drive some sort of change or action. And so we do that through a number of different ways. We spend a lot of time teaching. So this typically takes the form of half day or full day or longer in some cases workshops where we'll go into an organization and spend time with a group talking about the foundational principles for creating a graph that makes sense to someone else. And then going beyond that into how do you actually then communicate that data to someone else in a way that affords the understanding that you crave and the action that you seek. I've written a couple of books on these same topics, which we'll talk about more. You already mentioned the first one. The second one just came out, which I'm super excited about. And then we've just launched the Storytelling with Data community, which is an online resource for people to continue to hone their skills, which we can talk about. You look like you're biting at the bit to
I'm excited too. I've signed up to the beta on that one, so I'm excited to contribute and participate.
Yeah,
it's a great idea.
Podcast and a blog. And the goal is really to try to make all of this stuff accessible to everybody. Because I'm a huge believer and our team believes that there's a lot of value to be obtained by work that's already being done that just isn't being communicated as effectively as it could be. And so we're trying to push people forward on that.
No, I like that. And you mentioned, this isn't a secret, right? Like it's something like a lot of this is out there already. I guess it's just making people aware of it and showing them that they can do it too, which I like. It's not like you have to go through like 20 years of design school or like know how to code like crazy amounts. It's just those simple effective
tips. Or have fancy tools there are a lot of simple things that can be done that'll have great impact.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that mission statement because it's kind of... it's for everyone. And that's very noble, but also awesome because, the more people you can help, the better, I guess. So, which is great. Okay, no, thanks for that. That's great. I feel I've got a good understanding of, or the audience has as too, of what storytelling with data is a bit more. And we'll dive into some of those things you mentioned as well. So a little bit later. but actually, this is interesting. So if you don't mind me mentioning, so you used to work at Google before you worked at or started storytelling with data. And so, it's good, nice company, good job. Like, but what made you go, right, I've got to storytelling with data is my mission now. I'm dropping that. I'm going to focus on this. Like what was that tipping point? What made you think I've got to do this?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think back and I don't think there was, or at least I can't identify the single moment in time, right? Google, I was well into my career at that point. My career, you know, background in math and business and analytical roles. And at Google, it was on the people analytics team. And I'd always had this passion around the visualization piece. For me, it was a way to bring creativity in the process. And it was also this great unifier because when you take data and turn it into pictures, you can make it understandable in a totally new way. So it's a way of being able to talk effectively in many cases to maybe non-technical people or help bridge any gap between the technical and the non-technical. And while I was at Google, I had the opportunity to build a short course on visualizing data. And so got to pause and do some research there and start to gain a better understanding of why some of the things that I'd landed on through trial and error over time were effective and why some things were more effective than others and start to figure out how to teach these concepts to other people. And so at Google, there was a lot of interest in the course. We ended up rolling it out across the company. I got to travel to offices around the world teaching. And one of the things that I started noticing is how interesting it was that there'd be both salespeople and engineers in these same classes and people from other parts of the organization as well. But I think for me, those are such opposite ends of the spectrum on so many fronts. And yet they were all finding value in learning to do this better and desiring to do it better. And so over time, it became apparent that this is a skill set that pretty much anyone can use and have greater value or get people to do more with the data that they're doing stuff with already anyway. And so that, I think, I can't pinpoint the moment, but that was the aha sort of thought of this goes beyond Google and it's not role specific. It's not industry specific. Rather, there are core things that we can do across all sorts of different industries and roles and types of data to help afford better understanding and help people want to be inspired and do things with our data. And so I had the benefit of starting to test that out outside of Google while I still had the benefits of the day job and the security there. I had a very supportive manager who said, yes, that's fine. You know, do it on your own time, your own resources, all that. And so when I think back, you know, my first year doing stuff outside of Google, I was using every vacation day I had to, you know, fly on the red eye to, you know, the middle of nowhere in some cases and was thrilled if I'd get paid travel to go talk to somebody about data visualization. And I thought it was the coolest thing. And then over time, I started to realize like there is a need here. And I seem to be able to find like the demand is finding its way to me through word of mouth, through other things. And I thought, you know what, it's kind of now or never. Like I can't do this. I maxed out where I could do it as a part-time thing and was having such fun with it that I thought, you know what, it's time now. And I had a chance to test it out a bit with the safety of the day job, which made the jump easier. But yeah, I gave myself a year and said, okay, in this next year, I'm going to quit Google. I'm going to see what this is. I'm going to see if I can be as busy as I want to be, if I can be in charge of my own schedule, if there it really is sufficient demand out there, can I meet with it? And you know, that was almost 10 years ago now. And now like fast forward to today, and we have a team of people and multiple people teaching courses around the world, which blows my mind when I step back and think about it, right? Started as a passion project at Google and has grown into a business.
No, that's amazing, and it's really great because I work there right now, and it can get quite comfortable. So it's great that like you really found such a you had such a passion for this, but you really went for it. But it's great that you could like test and validate there was that need, and I'm sure. Absolutely. There's people are beating down your door now, just like constantly, I'm sure, like, because it's a global thing, right? Like you, because you've been like to Europe and Australia, like it's not just a niche thing in America, it's it's a global thing. So it's
One of the interesting things, because when we work with an organization, we solicit examples ahead of time. It's a way for us to get insight into how they're communicating with data currently, any challenges they might be facing. We use it to customize our content and as the basis of a lot of the hands-on activities. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting to be, I mean, one, it's a really interesting viewpoint to get to know an organization or a team through the way that they communicate with data. But it also reinforces this idea that it's the same, for me at least, what we're seeing is it's the same basic principles that can help across the board. And even in very different industries or roles, people generally are struggling with common sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of opportunity. And I think a ton of opportunity to learn from what people in spaces totally different from our own are doing, which is fun.
No, totally. And I think that's, it's really interesting is like that commonality, because it's kind of, sure, we have different languages and different businesses and different focuses, but humans, on the whole, we process things visually, like across the board, right? So it's, I guess there are those kind of common things which bind us all, no matter where you are. So I guess just making people aware of that and how that can help you tell that story. I think that's the other thing. That's why I love the name of your book and the company and stuff, Storytelling with Data. It's not just make graphs look cool. It's like graphs are just a tool to tell a compelling story. And so that's why I love it. Like, you bring that to the forefront as well, because otherwise, what's the point in making a chart look good if it's not going to help someone understand or change their mind and stuff like that?
Well, and there's an interesting thing for me, because if we think of, the data visualization as one piece of it and the communication as the other piece of that, whether that's, in person, you're talking somebody through something, or on paper, something you're sending around that's meant to be consumed on its own and by virtue of the words we put around it, those are two sort of separate pieces. And one works okay without the other one being perfect, but the alternative's not true. So for example, I can build the most beautiful data visualization in the world, and without the stuff to go around it to make it, resonate with my audience, make it something that makes sense to them, make it something that they care about, I run the risk of that beautiful data visualization falling flat. But the alternative, there's actually benefit there, right? I can get away without it being maybe the perfect graph, or maybe it's got some clutter or some other issues, let's say. But if I can talk through that in a way that does tell a story, that does resonate with my audience, or on paper, if I can put the words around it that do that successfully, that can still be an effective scenario. And that's one thing that's been interesting that I've observed over time. And today, in sort of a different way, which is people come to us first and foremost, I think, for the data visualization piece, but walk away and seem to be increasingly walking away with a better understanding of how important all the other pieces are that actually have very little to do with how you visualize the data. Right? It's how you talk about the data. It's how you think about your audience, how you think about how are you going to be presenting to them? Where are they going to look? And all of these other things that can make for a successful scenario or the alternative. And being thoughtful about how we approach those things becomes a really important piece of the puzzle.
But yeah, I love that you mentioned like understanding your audience, because having that empathy, I think, is often an overlooked, missing part of the puzzle.
Yes.
Because like, if you don't understand how your audience processes the data or what they care about, or speak in their language, often, a story with data can actually fall flat or be less effective.
Yeah, and I'll sometimes draw the parallel. So when we think of our typical business presentation, right? The typical business presentation follows a very linear path, where you start off, maybe with the hypothesis or the question that you set out to solve in the first place. Then we go through the data, right? Where did we get it? What did we have to do to clean it? What assumptions did we make? Then the analysis, right? What were the actual statistical methodologies we employed? And then finally, we get to maybe our findings and maybe in some cases, the recommendation, right? And this is the path that comes most naturally to the person working with data, because this is the path we go through typically when we're working with data. Mm. But something really interesting happens when we rethink things from the linear from the linear path, and instead along this sort of narrative arc. And for me, that's where story comes in, right? Because if we think of the narrative arc, you start off with the plot, then tension is introduced. That tension builds in the form of a rising action. It reaches a point of climax. There's a falling action, a resolution. And for me, the biggest change and probably benefit of moving from the traditional linear path of business presentations to rethinking things along the arc is for an arc, to get that shape, you have to have tension. And it's not the tension that matters to you, right, as a person putting whatever it is together. It's the tension that matters to your audience. Mm. And that is what I think we frequently overlook or forget about when we're communicating, because it's really easy to communicate for ourselves, right? I build a deck for my data or for my project. And it's easy to do that without ever stopping and thinking about person, the people on the receiving end of that. Whereas the arc is, you know, one of those strategies that I think we can use to remind ourselves that we should be thinking of things first and foremost from our audience's standpoint, right? And designing things first and foremost for them, not for us.
Totally, yeah, because you're doing it for them, right? Like, because they're not just hiring you to just have fun with data. They're hiring you to like make sense of it so they can make decisions. Or it's kind of funny. I don't know when I realized this, but that's why it resonates with me. But I kind of equate it to, like, if you went to a restaurant, you're there to have food, right? But so the last thing you want is the chef to come out for 30 minutes and go, okay, so I bought all these peas and I cut them up and chopped them up, and you're like, mate, I just want some food. Yeah, I just want some food. Yeah. Like, I don't care. Yeah, so it's kind of, but it's hard to do that, because as an analyst, you want to show all the work you've done. But it ultimately, in a weird way, that doesn't matter in terms of the story. It still matters you've done all that, but it's doesn't aid the story.
Well, here's where it comes back, where audience becomes very important, because there are some audiences who are going to want you to go through all of that detail, but many will not. And so it's really thinking about your audience and pausing to think about, what do they care about? What level of detail are they interested in? Do they just want to know the so what, or do they want to be led through all the nitty gritty of how you got there? Right? Because you don't care where he sourced the peas from, but maybe the food critic at the table next door does and wants to ask questions about those things. And so being cognizant and really thoughtful about who you're presenting to and what the scenario is. And, you know, is it something that has to be fully baked, or can you go in with an idea or some data and brainstorm and just being thoughtful about that? Because I think the trap I see people fall into too often is just that we present our data the way we've always done it, because we've always done it that way. Mm. Whereas there's such value, and particularly if the stakes are high, in thinking about a lot of different things, right? Who are we presenting to? What do they care about? What biases are they coming in with? Are we physically there with them, or there's a screen in between us, right? All of these things play into how we should be communicating. And it looks a little different each time. That's part of the reason it's fun, but it also makes it challenging.
Yeah, no, totally. It's that's kind of cool, because you think, like, oh, as an analyst or just dealing with data, it's just technical, but it's like an art too, because you got a whole people challenge, which, yeah, like you said, it makes it fun. Maybe not to everyone, but for me at least, it's fun.
If it's not fun, you might be in the wrong field.
Yeah, that's true. If you're like, oh, God, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. Okay, cool. Well, no, thanks for that. That led to a really awesome discussion. I found it really insightful. Thank you. So I guess the next question is, how did you actually go about acquiring these skills in data visualization and storytelling? Like, was it like, do you read up on theories? Is it just what you've learned on the job, or like, is it a combination?
Yeah, for me, it was a combination, right? It was always spending time on this piece, because that was one of the early reinforcing things for me in my career, was I always found that I spent more time on the graphs than the people around me. Because for me, it was a place to be able to invoke some creativity, right? Play with colors, play with different graphical forms, and try things out. But what I found is, over time, as I spent more time on the visuals, people spent more time looking at my visuals. And so it became this self-reinforcing thing. So for me early on, it was a lot of trial and error. But for me early on, it was before data visualization was really even a thing or like broadly accessible in any sort of way. Because it wasn't until Google, as I mentioned, when I had the opportunity to pause and do some research, that would have been circa 2007, 2008. So that was when I encountered Tufte's books, Stephen Few's books, Colin Ware, and read everything I could get my hands on and had these aha moments of, ah, here's why that works or why it doesn't, or what we should be thinking about when we're making some of these trade-offs in our design. And so it's been a lot of practice. And then, yes, getting an idea of, I kind of hate the term, but best practices along the way, right? Seeing examples of good work, pausing to understand what makes them effective, seeing examples of not ideal work, pausing to understand why they don't work. And then certainly after starting the company and starting to see examples from all sorts of different places, learning something from each and every one of them. And for me, that's the way you learn this stuff, is you learn it by doing. You know, certainly there's some foundational knowledge that's helpful as a jumping off point, but like anything, the more you do it, that's how you hone your skills. And really, that's the reason behind the practice book, right? When I think about the two books, Storytelling with Data, the original, is really the foundational principles, right? That was teaching hundreds of workshops and realizing, you know what, the lessons each time are pretty much the same. I'm going to codify those and put that out there in a book so that I can share them with more people. And then Let's Practice, that came out in October of this year, is a very different book. And I sort of hesitate to even call it a book because it's more like this immersive hands-on experience, right? Because it asks you to do work. And so it follows the same core lessons as the first book, but each chapter is organized into three sets of exercises. Right. So it starts off, there's practice with Cole. And these are examples, all of them inspired by real-world examples from our clients. We've genericized them as needed to preserve confidentiality. But where I put forth an exercise and you're meant to solve it on your own, but then I also walk through my solution as a way of introducing a ton more examples and insight into the thought process and just more kind of sticky cases. Everything is very cut and dry and sort of easy in the examples that are used in the first book. So, there are hundreds of examples in the new book, and it's just an opportunity to get into more sort of sticky situations. And a lot of it's more about the thought process than the specific outcome of the exercise, if that makes sense.
No, it does. But yeah, no, so the best way I find I learn, and I think a lot of others do with data visualization, is applied learning. So I love that you've got a book now, which actually, yeah, like you said, makes it sticky because they actually have to go through the exercises, not just go, oh yeah, that's a nice theory, I'll remember that. They actually then apply it, and then they can see the benefits, I guess, and the shift from what they had to what they get.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then the second section of exercises are unsolved. So these are for the person who just wants to practice more, or for managers wanting to assign things and help upskill their teams, or for university professors. We have over 100 universities around the world who are teaching from the first book. So the exercises that are unsolved, you can sort of mix and match them in endless amounts of ways to create assignments or group projects and the sort. And then the final exercise section within each chapter is practice at work. And that's where things get really tangible, where the instructions are, you take something you are dealing with in your day-to-day work life, and here's how to take that apart into the component pieces and think about when to get feedback, who to get it from, how to set good goals for skill development, and a whole host of other things. So if there was any gap between the first book and practical application, Let's Practice should solve that.
Amazing. No, that's great. Okay, now I look forward to going through that. And as soon as I saw your second book at the Tableau conference, I was like, yep, got to get it. And it's such a great idea. And I guess it's a great way for you to allow your knowledge to be, I guess, scaled, or your company's trainings to be scaled, because I guess there's only so many places you and your team can be. But if you know, in a book form, it's brilliant. You've got 100 universities already doing this stuff. It's great that you can reach more people that way.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Nice, that's smart. I like that. Okay, that's great. So next question is, okay, so this is from Brandy Beals, a Tableau ambassador. She was asking. Okay.
One of the tug organizers right here in Milwaukee, down the street from me.
No way, small world. Okay, so what would one piece of advice would you give to a new user building a dashboard?
Great question. And I love this question because it reminds me to make an important distinction. And we do this in all of our workshops, and it's particularly important here because we've been talking already quite a lot about story. Mm-hmm. And that's the distinction between the exploration of data and the explanation of data. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the exploratory process, that's where we're turning over rocks, combining data in different ways, trying to figure out what can we learn from this data, what's interesting here, right, that we might then want to turn into something to communicate to somebody else. After we've done that work is the explanatory part, where we've found something specific that we want to communicate to somebody specific. And for me, dashboards, and I'll lump any sort of regular reporting into this as well, fit more in the exploratory space, mm-hmm. where a dashboard is a tool that can help you very easily and quickly look through a lot of different data and get a sense of where are things in line with my expectations? Where are they not in line with my expectations, right? Where might there be interesting stories to dig into? So the dashboards, when it's done well, helps us uncover the stories more quickly. Dashboarding, though, when we think about a lot of the lessons that I talk about in the books or that we teach in our workshops about, you know, focusing attention, putting a takeaway title, telling a story, those are things that actually don't fit in that way in a dashboard, because that's not what a dashboard is for. Dashboard, in the way that I think about it, and there are different sorts of dashboards for sure, but I think about a dashboard as a way, as I talked about, to isolate those stories. And because it means we want to be able to look at a lot of data and focus on various different things, it means we actually don't want to focus attention or call out takeaways in the way that we do when we explain data. So what happens is, as soon as we focus attention on one point or highlight a specific takeaway, it makes any other potential takeaways harder to see. So when you're really designing for exploration, it's a different way of using color and titles and those sorts of things. A resource, by the way, that I always recommend when the topic of dashboards comes up is the Big Book of Dashboards. I'm sure many people who are listening are familiar, but it's a book, a big book, as the title would promise, of a couple dozen dashboards built by different people showing different things. And it's great both just to be able to flip through and get a sense of how people have visualized different sorts of metrics, but then also the commentary is the authors, right? Steve Wexler, Andy Cotgreave, Jeff Schaefer, who combined have a gazillion years of dashboarding experience. It's their commentary of what works well, what works less well, what they might have done differently. So it's a great book for inspiration, as well as getting an understanding of some do's and don'ts in dashboard land. But coming back to Brandy's question, because I think the first thing I'd recommend, and I should caveat that I don't play much in the dashboard space, right? I tend to live more on the exploratory side, the explanatory side. Oh, yeah. But some of my favorite tools to recommend, particularly when starting out, pencil and paper. Right? Because if you can sketch and get your ideas right in this low-tech sort of manner, then that enables you to have good conversations up front with your stakeholders that will take a lot of the iteration out of the rest of the process. So stay low-tech as long as you can would be one piece of advice I'd have in that arena. And actually, it's funny because so you mentioned the Tableau conference where you and I actually had the opportunity to meet in person, which is fun. My talk there, which felt a little risky at a conference that's mostly about a tool, was that actually you shouldn't start in your tool. Your tool shouldn't start coming until much later in the process, and focused on all of these low-tech strategies that we can use for helping things be more efficient when we do get to our tools.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, no, I loved attending that talk. And for anyone who's interested, I'll put a link to the video below, which is on the Tableau YouTube channel. But yeah, really inspiring. It kind of gets you ready to think about, again, just telling stories, or getting to you to take a step back and critically think about how you're telling a story, why you're telling a story, and all this stuff. And it was really inspiring to see. And it's done, again, like your books and your content, in a really accessible, easy to understand way. So yeah, highly recommend anyone to watch that. Yeah, it's great. And also, yeah, The Big Book of Dashboards, love it. I've actually really chuffed. I've got like a signed copy from all three of those guys too. Yeah, like it's a great resource. I definitely recommend it.
And I actually talked with them on the last episode of the Storytelling with Data podcast.
Ah, great. Okay. Well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes too. I haven't actually got a chance to listen to that yet, but I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah, it's
a nice. Okay. Well, this is actually quite a nice little segue. So the next question is, what tools do you typically use for data visualization? Do you limit yourself, or are you in the principle of finding the right tool for the right job?
So my general advice on tools is pick a tool or a set of tools and get to know them as best you can so that they don't become limiting when it comes to doing some of this stuff. Because any tool can be used well and can be used not so well. And so for me, there are no magical on the alternative end evil tools when it comes to doing this stuff. Our work at Storytelling with Data, we work primarily in Excel and PowerPoint, because those are the most pervasive when it comes to the business setting, which is where we're working. And I love the fact that anyone can pick up Excel and make a graph, right? It's simultaneously this totally fantastic and utterly terrifying concept. Somebody teaches us how to do this well. But that's certainly not the end all of tools, right? Tableau is very popular. And it can be helpful to choose tools where you have resources in those areas, right? If there are certain tools that your colleagues use. Now, if I think back to Google, was a sort of different scenario than I had encountered up to that point in analytical roles, which it was like, use whatever tool you want. You know, we'll buy licenses to everything, which... is a nice place to be in.
Definitely.
Endless budgets and such. But which was good in terms of that meant everyone could pick their tool of choice and use what they were comfortable in. So it wasn't limiting in that way. But it actually, the counter side of that was it meant there weren't so many people using any one tool. So if you encountered challenges or other sort of issues, there wasn't the same way to crowdsource how to get beyond that, if that makes sense, or to learn from others around you. Yeah. And now, fast forward to today, and there are many more resources out there and available and accessible online for being able to get good using different tools. There are many tools that one can use to do this stuff well. And it doesn't take fancy tools to do this stuff well. It takes being thoughtful about how you approach things.
No, totally. And no, that's a good answer, because I think a lot of people think, oh, if you don't know this tool or this tool, I'm not good. And it's like whatever I like to call like the think-do gap. Like as long as you can know what you need to do and you can do it, and the tool doesn't take you forever to do, then that's great. I mean, obviously knowing what to do is important too, and having the right tool to do it. But it's just got to be easy. So it's not a barrier or a massive point of friction to executing good practice. It's kind of like when I actually teach data viz now at Google as well. And one of the things I realized was, everyone gets really excited about the more complex tools like Tableau or R and D3. And I'm like, that's great. But what we've learned, the theory we've learned today, just maybe make it in slides. Like if it's an important graph, maybe quickly mock it up in Google Sheets and then just trace it in slides or the PowerPoint. Because then you have full control over every element. Oh, you want to put some numbers above the bar? Oh, you can just quickly do that. Put some text boxes up. You just want to change the color.
To do it in where you're moving stuff around, because you can introduce error. So be careful with that.
Yes. Definitely. That's why I'm you got to trace, because then but then you can apply things. Because I want to use some pre-attentive attributes to make this bar appear in the front and stuff like that. It's just sometimes I find people get excited and then they clash into these tools and they think, oh, I've got to learn these. They can't get over that hump.
So, well, and that's one of the reasons that pen and paper or pencil and paper are such important tools. Because if you can mock up something on paper, then you can step back and say, well, what resources do I have to make this real, right? What tools do I have access to? Or what experts can I lean on when it comes to some of this stuff?
No, totally. And
up from the constraints of your tools or what you know how to do in your tools.
Yeah, no, totally. And don't worry, I don't make every graph in slides. It's just like the sort of key important ones. Like if it has to really like pop and it's like the linchpin, then I might just put extra effort in. But but it's just trying to make it accessible to people so they can actually just apply what they've learned and not get all frustrated when they have to go, oh, now I've got to spend 2 weeks learning a tool before I can even do this. Yeah. Okay, great. Okay. So this is always a good one. What is your favorite data visualization, or do you have one?
Like favorite graph type?
I guess graph type. Yeah.
That's a tough one, right? Because different graphs serve different purposes. I think if I were only allowed to use one graph forever forward, it would be a bar chart because of the utility, right? You can use that to show a lot of different things and they're easy for us to read. But I wouldn't want to only be limited to bar charts going forward.
Yeah, no. That makes sense. That seems to be a common theme on the podcast. Like there's no one best data viz. It's more like it depends on the situation and the job. Yeah. And
this is a common misperception that, you know, for a given data set or for a given topic, that there is a right or perfect way to graph that data. Any data can be graphed a ton of different ways. And there's actually utility in iterating between different views of your data, right? Look at it as bars, look at it as lines, you know, switch your axes around, categorize by one thing, then decouple it and categorize by something else. These different views let you more or less easily see different things. So iterating through different views of your data can be a great way just to get to know your data better as well. Mm. And then to really be thinking about what is it that I want to enable my audience to do when they look at that graph and how do I make that easy. And if you're ever unsure, right, show it to a friend or colleague or show them several iterations. And that can be super useful, right? Mm-hmm. Have them talk through their thought process, where they pay attention, what questions they have, what observations they make, can help you sort of see things through fresh lenses in a way that we lose the ability to do over time with our own work and help you understand if what you've created is working or if you might need to make iterations.
No, that's such a great tip. I like doing that too, because if you think about it, again, it's that audience empathy. Like you're the worst critic of your biz because you've been staring at it. You know the data. You have the burden of knowledge, which can like fill in gaps. Whereas, yeah, if you show it to someone else, that's going to be your audience. They've seen it for the first time and they have to just get it. And if they don't, at least you're going to get that feedback before you present it to your real audience. But just having that fresh, those fresh eyes is the best.
Because when you create a graph, you always know what it shows and what it means and where to look, right? But we have to take intentional steps to get our audience to do the same. Because as you mentioned, they're not in it, right? They're encountering it for the first time, maybe.
Yeah, but that's just such a simple but very powerful and effective tip, though. Because obviously you can't bug your workmate like every 2 seconds, like, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? But like again, it's like for key things, like if they're like, wait, I don't understand, or like, what are you trying to say? Then that's a very good feedback to be like, oh, I need to maybe spend a little bit more time to make it come to life a bit better or just be more obvious. Yeah. So that's an awesome tip. okay. So this is always a good one. So what has been your like funniest or most memorable data viz mistake you've ever made? if you want to share that.
There are so many. Over time, right? You can't, I think that's how you learn. That's how you learn the most. I mean, I can think through. Yeah. Well, I'll pause on a couple of things. So if I think back to banking, my first sort of career where, you know, we'd put together these massive quarterly business reviews. And so to cut down on page count, we would, you know, put as many graphs on a page as we physically could fit. And they, you know, this was before I knew what clutter was or the negative impact, right? Where you imagine you've got a slide, you've got four graphs on this slide. And I can remember we had, you know, some background shading and like playing with shades of orange in a way that, you know, I look back now and I cringe, but it takes going through and seeing some of those things and seeing how it doesn't work. And I think about the conversations that we had with these pages packed with graphs. And they weren't very effective conversations, but it wasn't apparent yet to me, at least, that part of it was just because people were just, they had to be completely inundated with all of this data and unable to focus on anything because there was so much going on. And then it becomes distracting even to have a good conversation. And that's actually one of the really interesting things that I see happen in our workshops and that we get anecdotes from clients that we work with, which is when you take the time to visualize your data effectively and, you know, put the so what around it and really not just put data out there, but turn it into information that somebody can do something with, it completely shifts the conversation. Because when we just show a bunch of data to our audience, it's really easy to get requests for more data and more data and more data. And I think when that happens, that those requests for more data are really people wanting to understand the so what. Because when we take it to the next step, if we design our data well and we answer clearly that question of so what, it shifts the conversation where the conversation is not even any longer really about the data. It's about what does this mean given the context of our business? Should we do things the same? Should we do things differently? Is our strategy working? And it shifts the conversation so that data is an input, but data is not the thing that people are focused on. And I think that's how it should be.
Yeah, no, totally. No, I like that. And thanks. No, that's great. I love it. It's because the reason I started asking this question is because I think a lot of people see all these great data visualizers and they think, oh, they've just been amazing since they ever started. But I think it's always humbling to know. No one has
been amazing since they started, right? Everybody. Mm. I mean, everybody who I know, yeah, you think back to Steve Wexler, who I mentioned before, the Big Book of Dashboards. He loves sharing mistakes so that other people can learn from them, which I think is a fantastic way. Yeah, nobody started out great at this. It takes iterating and learning and trying things and learning from things that really don't work and learning from the things that do work and learning from others around. The cool thing is I think that learning curve has sped up a lot, right? When I think of when I started, my first job out of school was in 2002. So that's, is that even right? Yeah. A long time ago, or what feels like a long time ago, right? When they're just resources weren't available in the same way as they are today. And there weren't as many resources around in this space. This is of course a double-edged sword, right? Cause now things are so accessible that it's like, where do I start in cases?
No, that's cool. That's a very good point. It's I started, I guess, as an analyst like 15 years ago, and it was more just you're scrambling just to get like any numbers in front of people. But now you have the luxury of, how do I now make them easy to understand and good? And tools, resources, and like online communities like to help you out. You're not alone. I think that's probably one of the good things about the internet in this space. It's just, often sometimes if you're an analyst in a team or in a big organization, you might feel isolated, but now, you can be, it's more accessible. Like, oh, other people are going through these same issues. I'm not alone. I can learn from them, or vice versa.
And I think being aware also, right? Cause you think about like Facebook and Instagram and people being jealous of other people's perfect lives. Cause you publish like the good pictures, right? Where everybody's smiling, happy. I think the same is probably too with graphs, right? There aren't a lot of people publishing shitty graphs. Like you wait, you publish the work you're proud of. And that is not the full picture of every graph anyone creates. And so I think being aware of that when looking at things online, especially, and that's one of the, not the direct reason, but I think one of the reasons that I'm hoping the Storytelling with Data community that we've been working on for quite a while and that is sort of finally coming together in a way that people can start using is for there to be a space where people can show their work in progress and get feedback. Because as we've talked about, I'm a strong believer that to get good at this stuff means practicing and getting feedback and giving feedback, right? You learn a lot that way and discovering great work and talking to other people who may be encountering similar challenges or may have found solutions that you might be able to use in your own work. And so the community's really been crafted to try to facilitate all of these things. And so it's an online community. We've divided things into a few main areas. There's practice, which we've pulled the Storytelling with Data Challenge that we've been doing monthly over the course of the past couple of years into the community. So this is a monthly challenge where each month the topic is different. This month we're building infographics where it's, go find data on a topic of interest to you and build an infographic and share it with community and give each other feedback. But our topics have ranged over time from, you know, a simple line chart or bar chart to some more complicated stuff like visualizing uncertainty. And I've actually just been reviewing all of the, we had 48 submissions in November, which was our first month doing the challenge inside the community, which I'm super thrilled about. And it's been neat to see, I think, both the increase in the number of examples that we're seeing of people sharing real work examples, right, or genericized examples from their work, and in the increase in dialogue we've been getting and conversations that are ensuing as a result. Because historically, you know, there was a little bit of chatter on Twitter, but you're limited by the character count. And now we can actually give meaningful feedback or ask questions to get the sort of input that the person's looking for. So there's a monthly challenge. We also have exercises, which are more similar to what you'll encounter in the practice book, which this is meant to be, you know, take 15 or 20 minutes of your day and focus on some really specific thing where all the data is provided. It's specific tasks that you're asked to do to really flex various skills when it comes to visualizing and communicating with data. And what happens is, as soon as you submit your solution to a given exercise, you're able to see my solution, the team's solution, as well as anybody else who's contributed to that particular exercise. So it's an awesome way to be able to see how many different people have approached the exact same challenge and learn, right, from where are they similar, where are they different, and such.
No, I like that. Yeah, because I guess there's no one way to crack a data viz nut, right? Like, and you can get inspired, and then when you come to the next challenge, you can be like, "Oh wait, that person did this. I'm going to try and do that this time."
Yep.
And, no, I really like that. So, actually, I was going to ask this later on, but just with the community, so if people want to get involved, join. Like, how would they go about doing that?
Great question. So everybody can go to community.storytellingwithdata.com. You will encounter a form that asks you, you know, if you're interested, put in your info here and we'll let you know when it goes live. But an insider tip, if you fill that out, you soon after that will have an email in your inbox that gives you all of the details on how to join. So we're in beta testing mode right now as we've finish some of what we've started, but all of the core functionalities there, right? So it's the ways of practicing that I outlined. There are there's a place for feedback where you can submit a visual and ask for feedback from the community, from the Storytelling with Data team. There's a discussion forum where you can start conversations or ask a question related to any topic related to communicating with data. And then there's also the capability to discover great work. So individuals can fill out their member profile, including, you know, what their goals are when it comes to improving skills. They can upload visuals to their gallery. And when they do so, those visuals become discoverable and searchable. And so one really great thing about the community, from my standpoint, is just it makes all of our stuff so much easier to find and becomes so much more robust over time as the community starts lending content as well. So I've gone through and every graph from both of the books are now in there and searchable and discoverable. So for me, I'm like, oh, this is such an easy way to be able to, you know, isolate and get to certain visuals versus flipping pages of the book. And, but yeah, it will hopefully make all of our resources more accessible too.
Oh, amazing. Exciting. So yeah, I'll put that link down below too. So everyone who's listening can go experience that. That's great. Okay. So yeah, we've spoken about how people can improve and kind of understand the value of data visualization. But what advice could you give to someone who's looking to improve their company's data viz culture?
Yeah, this is a good question. And this is something that we, or a question I should say, that's posed by our clients very frequently, right? Where oftentimes the team who we're with directly gets it, right? And they want to improve skills and they want to take time to do this well. But shifting an organizational culture, if that's not the norm, takes effort, right? Takes time, takes patience. And so I'm always an advocate of start small, right? Start with the easy stuff. Don't go against any big, don't go up to big challenges first, right? So I'll quip in workshops sometimes, you know, don't go to your next board meeting and say, "Hey folks, today we're going to do something a little different. Today I'm going to tell you a story," right? It's not the place to try out something, particularly if it feels countercultural. But look for easy, low risk wins, right? Because as you start to develop wins in lower risk areas, it builds both your confidence as well as your credibility with those around you to be able to force more sweeping changes or encourage more sweeping changes over time, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I think for teams looking to shift the culture, really thinking about how you can do that in a way that's going to fit with how your team works. And to think about, do you do it on projects that are work related, or do you maybe do it with projects that are not work related? Because there can be great values. The doing stuff in the work environment can sometimes feel risky, right? Or, you know, you've got norms already maybe that are hard to break. Whereas if you start something that's based on something else, so for example, Simon Beaumont at JLL started doing the Storytelling with Data Challenge that I mentioned earlier with his team. They do it on a monthly basis where, and they don't do it synchronously. They'll pick something from a past challenge and say, okay, this month we're going to focus on, you know, annotated line charts, say. And they give everybody a couple weeks to go and build their data visualizations. They share them all with each other. And then he's got a dispersed team. They're not all in the same location. So then near the end of the month, they all come together in a webinar sort of form. And people talk through what they created and why, and they give each other feedback. And so it's on topics that are totally not work-related, right? In spaces where people might feel more free to try things out that they otherwise wouldn't do. But what he has told me is that doing that has actually helped encourage, and he's seeing great examples of more of that open feedback happening on the day job as well. So I think thinking about what works for you, right? Or we've seen other organizations that'll start their own monthly forums for sharing great examples, you know, of things that people have tried that have worked, or things that people have tried that haven't worked. And then some organizations have taken it so far as to create, you know, if someone puts forth something that works, and maybe they vote and make it a friendly competition, right? Of, you know, like who did the best job with something this month, and then create a sort of catalog of those examples, which becomes a nice thing over time for people to be able to flip through if they're running into challenges, or if you have a new person who joins and you can give them this as an example of, you know, what good looks like. So there's no end of things you can do, I think, to help there continue to be focus and momentum on this sort of stuff. Probably most important is figuring out a way to do it that's going to work for your team or for your organization. There's actually an exercise in, so chapter 9 in the practice book is all focused on practice at work. And one of the exercises there is on creating a conducive culture for feedback and for visualizing data, telling stories with data. And I mentioned a couple of the ideas already, but there are more outlined there as well.
Oh, exciting. No, that's good. Even more reason for me to read the book now and for others to get the book. That's, but that's great. I like that, like start small. Build up that momentum, and then not be restricted to just work stuff. That's great. Starting points. No, thanks for that. Okay, so we've just got one more question. Thanks Cole for your time, but I think a lot of people have probably been very excited or keen to figure out where they can start their journey if they haven't already with Storytelling with Data. So what advice would you give? Where would be the best place to start?
Yeah, absolutely. Best place to start, check out our website, storytellingwithdata.com. And there you'll find how to get to all of the resources that we've talked about, right? The books, the podcast, the blog, the new community. So that's a jumping off point to be able to continue to hone data viz skills.
Okay, no, that's great. No, thanks. And yeah, like I said, I'm going to put all the links below. So if anyone's interested, it's easy to find and just click down there. So okay, so that's it for this podcast. I just wanted to thank Cole for her time and her knowledge. And yeah, it's been really great having you on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, David. It's been a fun chat.
Cool. Yeah, no, thank you very much. And again, if anyone's interested, all the stuff we talked about is below. And thanks for listening, everyone. And be sure to check out the show notes for everything we've covered today. And if you're new to the podcast, consider subscribing to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, and also visit datasaurus-rex.com/welcome to see all of the other data visualization content we have to help you out. Until the next time, thank you, and thank you, Cole.